What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Cruising along here on a Friday afternoon. Mike Shope is on vacation. We'll be away all of next week as well. I am the Bulldog. Sal Capaccio is live at Highmark Stadium for this evening's return of the blue and red practice. Is it practice? Scrimmage? What is it actually called, Sal? It's not called a scrimmage, is it?
It is not, and I know people call it that, and that's fine. I'm kind of a little bit too strict on that myself.
Yep.
Because when I think of scrimmage, I'm like, you're coming to a place to watch like an offense and a defense or two teams battle each other, and there's scoreboard keeping. That's a scrimmage to me.
Right.
Like that's not. Now, they might have a scrimmage period here, but it is really an open practice. And when you brought up like earlier, going back to the days of the Sabres open practices, right? Those were great because they do some scrimmaging. They do a little bit of, you know, against each other. That's not what a scrimmage is. That's not what this is. This is an open practice. Will they go offensive defense live? Yes. They're not going to take each other down to the ground. But it'll be more up thought. It'll be, to me, the best way to describe it is they're going to have a practice like they do at St. John Fisher, but they're going to do it here. They just might have a little bit more of the live stuff, offense against defense, than they normally do.
Yeah. So it is the final year of the stadium, and this is the first event of the final year at the stadium. Say what you will. There's a preseason game next Saturday, but this is the first time in the stadium for the season for a lot of people. And it could be, as I said at the very outset of our show today, Sal, it might be the last time in the stadium for some people that are going, whether it's just maybe they're from out of town and they're here, you know, in the summer visiting and they can't make it to home games or can't afford it, whatever. So I was thinking a lot about the stadium today as we got going. And I know we already talked about and debated a little bit about, you know, the best games and the very top of the list and some memorable moments. But what I wanted to ask you here, if you're okay with it, like now you said this is season 12 now on the sidelines for you?
Yes, it'll be season 12. Yeah,
so
incredibly.
What are the what do you have like in your for your own self, like what the moments are for you? Because your perspective, I know when we talk during the week, once the season starts, there will be times where there are plays that happen and I'll want to know where you were for it, right? Because like, what was your perspective on, say, the Amari Cooper lateral to Josh Allen last year, I think was one that I talked about. But like for you, what are the top of the heap moments that you've been on the sidelines for?
So there are a few that come to mind right away. And I would tell you that when you think of where I would be for a lot of these, I'm on the Bills sideline, obviously, or I could be in the end zone. Sometimes I'm there, but generally for a play like that, like you just described, Josh Allen, the lateral, that's in the far end of the end zone. That's the far side. That's the Niners sideline. That's the visitor's sideline. So I don't have as good a perspective. A lot of times the things that happen are when I have the perspective of it being kind of right in front of me, right? And that brings into what happened the very first year I was on the sidelines, and a couple of iconic pictures of me looking right at Sammy Watkins' feet as he was toe-tapping 2 feet in front of me for a touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
Yeah, to win it, right? That was pretty cool, and you could see me looking right at his feet in that moment. And of course, that's when the Bills were in a playoff drought and they weren't as good as they are now. And since then, there's been a lot of great moments with the Bills when they've been really good and, you know, some of the things that have mattered. And I think one of the first ones that comes to mind, believe it or not, is something that I was not on the field for. And that is Taron Johnson's pick six.
I was in the stands.
Right. Because we could not be on the field as part of the COVID protocols. There were, what, 6,500 people in the stands, Bulldog,
Something like that, right?
Yep, yep. And I was one of them, and a lot of us in the media, we had to be in the stands in a certain area. But I could roam the stands, but I had to be up in them, and they called it the moat. So I am right near the goal line, but I'm about maybe 10 rows up in the stands watching. He catches that ball, and as he's running out, I'm kind of trailing, and I start running down the moat, the aisle, right? Because there's nobody there. Because I have this kind of thing to myself. And I've always said this, you know, that you always hear people say about things going in slow motion. You're like, yeah, whatever. It's just kind of a saying.
Uh-huh.
And I will tell you, for the first time in my life, and still only time maybe I remember to think about, it was like things happening in slow motion in my life. I was watching him run while I was watching the stands and the fans and people go crazy up and down. And it was unbelievable, the picturesque scene of that from my spot where I was.
Yeah, that is – that almost – listen, it's still, you know, disappointing, sad, whatever, that more people weren't in the stadium for such an incredible moment in such an important game, right? This is the first year of the Bills really arriving as a bona fide contender, right? They'd lost the wild card game the season before in Houston. And so it's just becoming real, right? But I feel like for those who were there and like for you, that it's so different makes it stand out more, probably, like, makes it more pronounced. I mean, you're one of the few that were there for it. That's one thing. But this scene you're describing would have never happened in a regular game, right?
No, that's right. That's right. Now, there's been other things that have happened. For example, the fight that happened between Leonard Fournette and Shaq Lawson. I literally got knocked into the wall, like, during the fight. And I hit the wall. I'm like, oh, my God, get out of here, right? Like, things like that happened. One of the crazier, funnier things that ever happened was during the Miami Dolphins game here a few years ago at night. Remember the Saturday night game with the snow and people throwing the snowballs in the field, right? And referee Bill Vinovich wanted the fans to stop. He sees me with a microphone. He thinks I'm the PA announcer for the stadium. So he walks up to me and says, can you announce to these people to stop throwing snow? And I said, sir, I'm not the announcer for the stadium. I'm on the radio right now. Right. And he's looking at me and he's looking at my mic like, what are you talking about? You can't talk to these people. You have a microphone in your hand. And I'm like, yeah. And I have a couple great pictures that are still in my phone that I bring up every once in a while to show people of me explaining this to Bill Vinovich, and he has this super confused look on his face.
How in the world have I never... You haven't told me that story before, have you?
I don't think so. There's a lot of crazy stuff. Okay,
I hope not, because I forgot it if you did, and that's a great story. I can't believe I would have forgotten that story.
It is amazing. It is one of the most amazing things that ever happened to me, like, in my life. I'm like, this NFL referee in this huge game on Saturday Night Football is telling me to please announce to the crowd to stop throwing snowballs. I'm like, sir, I can't do that. I have a microphone in my hand. I'm talking to the radio.
He wants you to go Sam Weiss.
Yes,
you're not from Cleveland.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly right. So anyway, then the other thing is last year, final game here against the Baltimore Ravens, Mark Andrews drops the pass. Now, when he had it in his hands, I thought, oh, he's got this. For that split second, you thought he's got it, right?
Mm-hmm.
He drops the pass. I am the closest human on the planet to him when he drops the pass. Maybe there's a defender right behind him. I picked up the ball and handed it to the official.
Oh, wow.
I picked up that ball, Bulldog.
Wow.
Wait, I picked up that ball.
Yeah.
It's in my hand, and I'm thinking, holy cow, the Bills just won this game as I'm holding the ball and handing it to the official.
That is something. Did you have any – I know, you know, like, you're a pro. You're on the sidelines. There's no cheering, right? Did you have to make sure to – was it just instinct to pick the ball up, or did you have to, like, contain – your level of like was there a fist pump, even a subtle one, anything at all?
There's always that in some regard. There's always a frustration or a fist pump or something you're doing inside because you're part of the action. You're part of the moment. And anything that happens, right? When it's like there's a big play and it goes for the Bills, a big play against the Bills, you always have this emotion in some way that you always have to contain. You can't show that. You're going to get in trouble. That's not what you're there for. You're there to do the job. But,
right.
I mean, I'm part of it. I'm you know, the adrenaline's pumping. Now, in that moment, that very brief moment of do I pick up the ball always happens because I picked up I picked up footballs before. Heck, Bulldog, another one is I literally caught a kickoff from Tyler Bass at the Rams, the opener, because he kicked it out of bounds. And it came to me and I caught it. Like, I caught it on the sidelines. Right? Like, you sometimes the ball just comes to you. You got to pick it up or you got to do whatever. So in that moment, the ball's sitting at my feet. And for a brief moment, I'm like, do I touch it? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Right? It's standing there and I'm just going to hand it like I would normally. And that's when I picked it up and scooped it up. But it does also get me to not like show emotion because I'm kind of just making sure I do that instead of anything else. I do think if you watch the game broadcast, and I don't think I realized I did it, I do think I gave a no good sign, like incomplete sign, very briefly when it happened.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now I think that's just kind of natural. A lot of people do that. You're on the sidelines. You see people like, oh, it's good or it's no good because right. We all do that at home a little bit. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right. I wonder if Mark Andrews saw you out of the corner of his eye. Just like,
I don't know.
Who's this guy with the headset on?
Yeah.
I don't need you in this moment right now, buddy. I mentioned this earlier when we were talking about, you know, moments. Again, there's a lot of different ways to frame this conversation about the stadium and these, you know, these games. You're talking about moments, and like moments are different than best games ever, which we covered earlier. I mentioned the Nyheim Hines touchdown,
yes.
the kickoff return, the opening kickoff, and then he did it again to open the second half, which was also incredible, but not as incredible as the opening kickoff of that game, first time back on the field after DeMar Hamlin. That is a scene that I still get emotional thinking about.
Yeah, and when things like that happen, now you're in the moment of, it's not the play itself, it's the reaction. And a lot of my job on the sidelines is to get that reaction. I'm watching players. I'm watching coaches. I'm watching interactions with people. And when I turned and saw the emotion there, then the emotion starts pouring out in everybody, right? You see everybody. It kind of becomes contagious in that moment. And then you look at the fans and you see it. And boy, it was amazing. I will tell you, as much as we talked to circle back to the very first thing you asked about the best moments, and I said I was in this stadium for 51-3. It was a party. The night of the perfect game. To be in this stadium and watch so many fans be so fulfilled, I get choked up thinking about it. Like,
yep.
To watch so many fans behind me, in front of me, beside me, have that moment, it still resonates with me forever.
Yeah, that is good. You know, the morning after that game, I went with Jeremy White from our morning show out to the camper lot to help him pack up because he and his wife, Mal, they have a camper. And so they're a part of that scene out there in the camper lot tailgating. And I went with him that it was a Sunday morning because that game was Saturday night, right? So the Sunday morning to go help him pack up the camper and get it out of there. And like all around, you know, it's a parking lot where there had been, you know, massive parties going on before, and I'm sure probably after the way mm-hmm. that game went, right? There was, I still have the photo somewhere, I'm sure, I know I didn't delete it, my phone might have lost it somehow, because whatever, things get fishy with my phone sometimes, but I think everyone has this problem to some extent. There was a discarded, like a Patriots coffee mug lying in a puddle. Right around Jeremy's, right around the trailer, right around the camper site.
Yeah, yeah.
And like it was a bright sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. This Sunday morning, we went out there to do this, and the shadows and it was such a. I'm like, this is perfect. Look at this thing. That
I know, yeah.
That game was quite a ride.
It was kind of just appropriate, right, for the moment to see something like that.
All right, Sal, we know you got to get down to the field, so we'll let you go here, wrap up this segment, and thanks a lot for jumping in here, and I know we'll talk, you know, into next week as well, but enjoy this tonight, have a great weekend, and thanks for sitting with me for a couple of hours.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
That is our dude, Sal Capaccio. I will go ahead and fit in all of the training camp sponsors, even though this isn't actual training camp at St. John Fisher University. But still, our coverage is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer. Today. We will take a timeout. Be back for more Aaron Quinn Cover One on the Bills coming up at the top of the hour. I'm the Bulldog and you're listening to WGR.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey, put a little bit. I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit. Put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the Bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy you've chosen to spend some of your Friday afternoon with us here at WGR. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has been away for the back end of this week and will be on vacation next week as well. I am the Bulldog. Zach Jones alongside. I've got Sal Capaccio hanging out at Highmark Stadium. We will be continuing to have Sal for this hour, and then 5 o'clock comes and the practice begins there. That's why he's there. And he'll be tied up doing, well, they'll do like a mock broadcast. It won't be on the air, but they do a practice run because there is a preseason game next Saturday. I mean, it's here, folks. There was a game last night, a preseason game that very fittingly, I loved, you know, the kids say, we are so back, right? Like that's a very, I don't know, even the kids, but I got there just in time to hate on Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh has always annoyed me ever since he acted like a teenage kid when he won a game in Detroit against Jim Schwartz. And like, I just think he's super obnoxious. So not a fan. And I turn the game on and there he is pounding Trey Lance's shoulder pads. Like, oh, here we go. Like, oh my God, dude. And then the game starts and we've got a fumble on the opening kickoff. And of course there's a review and like, okay, here we are. It's all back in all its glory. Here is the NFL. Something else that was featured, in the game, Sal, was the new first down. Are they calling it, is it called Hawkeye? Like the tennis thing? Like what is the name for it? But we saw like a measurement that was not the chain gang.
It's Hawkeye technology, like in tennis, but they're not spotting the ball like Tennessee. I didn't watch the game last night, but apparently Chris Collinsworth said, oh, it's just like tennis. And as Jeremy was pointing out, it's not just like tennis. They're not spotting the ball or telling you where the ball is based on the technology. So the officials will still spot the ball. Nothing changes. Like, let's go back to the AFC Championship game last year. We all know the controversy. That would not change anything, what they're doing. Like, the officials are still saying, this is where I think the ball is.
Right.
Nothing changes with that. There's no chip in the ball that's going to determine anything different. They're going to put the ball down. What's different now, though, is once it's put down, they're going to use this electronic technology now to say, is it a first down? And it's going to basically have some sort of whatever, some sort of laser or however they want to do it and show and go, okay, there it is. It's a first down. It reached the line to gain. And if it is, that where they're not going to stop the game and bring out the chains. We have not seen chains come out anyway over the last few years very often. But now they're not going to do it. And the way Sean Smith described it to us in the media is they're going to show it on the big board, on the screen, in the stadium. So they'll show it on TV. And it's going to be kind of like a, I don't know, in that regard, I would say like tennis, right? Which is, there it is,
right?
When you watch a tennis match.
Right.
Here's the thing that's really weird, though, okay? And I can't wrap my head around this right now. And I didn't watch last night to see it. So there still will be down markers on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So the ball starts, let's say, at the 35. You have a person with the 35. You have a person at the 45 with a down marker. There's no chain that connects it, though. There's just two down markers.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, well, wait a minute. My first thought is, how do you know then where exactly 10 yards are? You could be a little off if you're the other person, right?
Right.
But I think the answer is this, and I'm going to give credit to Carl Jones, our buddy from Channel 4, who brought this up to me, and I said, you're right, Carl, that's exactly right. Over the last couple of years, the NFL made a change. It was a subtle change, but they did this. When there's a first down, it's just on first downs, they do not place the ball at the in the half like hash mark. If it's a first down at the 41 and a half, they put it at the 42 or the 41. They put it there. So therefore, now go back to what I just said about no chain. The person on the other end will know exactly where to put it. Now, during the play, if it's second down or third down, it's just spotted where it's spotted. But when right. you do have a first down, they no longer use – they use only the hash marks right where they are.
Will they always be rounding up?
It's a good question. I think they do. I think they always round up. Maybe it's the closer one. Maybe it's round up or round back. Maybe they determine if it's closer. That could be what it is. I don't know if it's round up or down. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But that would solve my dilemma in my own brain of, wait a minute, how does the person on the other end of the 10 yards know where to put it?
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so at least that part of it. I feel like the whole thing is a giant nothing burger. In the end, because of the fact that the 60-year-old, not to pick on 60-year-olds, I'm 60. I don't think you shouldn't want me standing on the sideline trying to figure out in a schmozzle of bodies where the football is when Josh Allen is trying to pick up a fourth and one in the AFC Championship game. I might not be great at that, right? So the fact that that part remains, that's always been. Look, the chain gang is antiquated, and you know, you can. Mike has said it many times. Like, we've got all this technology, and we've still got these guys running out there with the chains, and it just kind of looks ridiculous. I get it, but it's never been the most problematic part of the ball spot and whether it's a first down or not. Correct. It has to do with the person that is running in and getting overruled by the other guy who saw it different or whatever it is. Like, that problem still exists. I don't care how they're determining whether it's a first down or not. That's never been a problem. It's where the ball is put. And if you're not fixing that, I got no time for any of this. Listening to them talk about it on the broadcast last night, like, it was just some great breakthrough. And it's like, what are we talking about? This is not. It's nothing. All you're doing is removing the specter of the guys running in with the chains. And again, like, it looks a little silly, but it was a fine system for determining whether you got the 10 yards or not. The problem is who's putting the ball on the ground. Always has been.
I agree with you, and I would say this. I don't think the NFL did any of this to correct any sort of problem. I think all they did was just try to speed up the game.
Yeah,
that's the issue, right? Which is they weren't even looking at it as we have a problem. They're looking at it as how can we be more efficient and speed up the game. And I'm going to be honest, I like the chains coming out. It created drama. I like that part of the game.
Right.
It was really cool. Oh, they're going to bring the chains out. Guys, clear, clear, clear. We got to get the referee to take a look. And I've been on a football field where a referee put a credit card or some. Oh, that's it looks like the credit card.
Index card or something.
He put
it
on the chain to see if it would go and touch the football. Right? Like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's totally drama.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that anymore. Now, you could have drama still with this whole thing on the scoreboard. Let's hit the button. Let's see if it's there. Let's reveal what's behind door number one.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Monty Hall now. All right, let's go. I mean, we could do that. I get it. But you're right. This doesn't solve the issue of what has come up, and especially in what we saw the AFC Championship game yesterday. Last year, and what people have been talking about since then. But I don't think the NFL believes they have an issue with that. Or if they do think they have an issue, I don't think they've thought at all that they need to in some way address it or recognize it, to be more honest with you.
Yeah, the chip in the ball for the goal line for this, I honestly have no idea how cumbersome that technology would be, you know, how quickly someone who would be operating parts of that technology could set the 10-yard grid, a team's in hurry up or something, and maybe there's some honest logistical reason why you can't really do it. But that's the fix. Like, anybody, I've seen this, I think, numerous times over the months since this, it was announced that they were going to use this Hawkeye technology. Like, oh, look at this. The Bills lose a playoff game and there's another rule change. Like, yeah, no, this does not fix what happened in the AFC title game on that quarterback sneak at all. It's just the ball's going where the ball's going. That hasn't changed at all. So I don't know. To me, it's a lot of the NFL to some extent taking a bow for doing nothing really. All they did was change how we're going to find out whether it's a first down or not. And Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really need any of it. And I think I knew all that already, but just seeing it yesterday, and you know how it's the first broadcast of the year. They want to show off the new thing. Oh, look at this. Look how we do this now. And I'm like, I don't care. thanks for nothing, NFL, is where I end up on that. So anyway, let's talk a little. We'll hopefully get back to the stadium here before you have to leave us at 5, Sal. But
can I mention, by the way, by being in the stadium right now, the gates have opened. It is awesome watching so many people filter down and these kids running down to be near the wall. Like, it is just, it's amazing. Like, to see the sea of red, white, and blue, the jerseys everywhere. By the way, go back and watch a football game from the 80s. Like, nobody wore jerseys in the stadiums. Nobody wore gear. It's right. Just like regular, right? Hockey, doesn't matter. It's hockey, football, baseball, everybody's just got like regular clothing. Now it's all your team colors everybody wears. But I'm watching this right now, Bulldog, and people are coming in the stadium, and they're just flowing down by the wall, and kids everywhere, and it's just great, and this is what this is all about. I love that. And of course, next week is the preseason game. It's Kids Day, kids game, because it's the only preseason game. And I had to just go out to the, you know, when you walk outside where we are in the radio booth here, and we go out to where you first walk in the entrance, I had to do that to go grab my credential for today. And I walk out there, and the first person I see walking in is Daryl Talley. Just now, about 10 minutes ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he's here tonight for this.
That is fantastic. I hope that's in some sort of team-related capacity, that he'll be available.
I don't know. I didn't have time to ask, but I'm like, whoa, what's up? You know, we said hi to each other. He walked by. He looks great still, by the way. Daryl always looks good. And then, but anyway, he is here tonight, so I am wondering if there's something, you know, going on with that.
All right, awesome. Good to hear that. All right, what I wanted to ask you about is the trade demands. Terry McLaurin, Washington, Micah Parsons, Dallas. McLaurin was yesterday, I think, during our show, right at the end of the show, and then Parsons is this afternoon, just before I got started, and we got started at 3 o'clock. You know, both players, to varying degrees, would be of interest, I think, to any Bills fan. But you know, how realistic is it at all if the Bills were to, you know, want to kick the tires? I would say this much, Sal. You definitely, and thank you, Sal's turning his camera around for people watching on Twitch and on YouTube. Sorry, I meant the Twitch and YouTube, to show what he was describing as the fans are starting to filter into the stadium for this open practice. And yeah, I mean, that's a good amount of people down there by the wall already. I'd want to call the Cowboys just because they're the Cowboys. Like, you know, in the offseason when we weren't sure what was going to come with the James Cook contract situation, like, well, if trading him's an option, you know who I want to call? I want to call Dallas, because they might overvalue a running back that only played 44% of the snaps. So get on the horn with Dallas. So if they are going to take calls on Micah Parsons, now that's a different thing than Parsons saying he wants to be traded. The team has to be willing to engage on that. I would want to call just to see, because you just never know what they might do, Dallas. I think their you know, their owner and GM might not be as super sharp as he used to be or anything. So I don't know. I'm calling Dallas, but neither of these guys are realistic targets, are they?
No, I don't think so. The barrier for me has always been not the trading point. It's the price point of once you get them on your team. And, like, you have to pay them then. And the Bills don't have the kind of money to be able to pay these players what they are asking for. Now, in the case of Terry McLaurin, I think he's 30 already, right? Mm-hmm. I think Terry has already turned 30. Like, I don't think the Bills have any interest in paying Terry McLaurin the kind of contract that he wants at the age of 30. Haven't they already kind of demonstrated this, the way they build their wide receiver room? He's a really good player.
I want to say I agree with that. I would not – I mean, he'd be the best receiver on the team, but at what price? $30 million a year for a 30-year-old receiver. Like, they could be getting, you know, Diggs about to hit the cliff again or something. Like, I don't want any part of that myself, you know, recognizing that in a short time frame it could be really good, but I think there'd be long-term maybe problems there with a big contract. Parsons, considering his age, Sal, he should be the highest paid defensive end or pass rusher or linebacker, whatever, hybrid, you know. He should be. He should get more than Watt and Garrett, or more than Hendrickson wants or whatever, because of his age, simply. I mean, not to mention the production.
It is a team you've already made a deal with this year, Kyrie Elam. He is in Dallas. You made a deal with him, right? So you already know, you already have a relationship there. I do think that, like, if would I think that Brandon Bean could make a phone call? Sure, I wouldn't doubt. Like, hey, what are you looking for? You know, and then at the end of the day, he might, you know, get an answer. He just like, yeah, I can't do that. But even if he said, even if it was something that was okay, maybe we could do that. I don't know how he would manage paying him. I do think it's the kind of player they would pay, though, which is interesting, right? It was what I'm saying. Like, McLaurin is the kind of player they wouldn't pay at his age. I do think that's the kind of player they would pay at 26 years old at that position, given how they've been searching for that position and going and swinging big a little bit here with Von Miller and now Joey Bosa and some of the assets that they've used.
Yeah. Just for some frame of reference here, Khalil Mack was 27 when he was traded from the Raiders to the Bears, and the cost of that trade, well, that trade actually was this: 2 first-round picks, a third and a sixth, for Mack, a second, and a conditional fifth is what that trade broke down as. And, you know, that's a lot of stuff, but I would do that. Where the Bills are on their timeline right now, picking at the end of the first round every year, I would have no problem paying the price. The question, of course, becomes if that's the price. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Dallas, if they engage in this at all, will be more unrealistic than that. I don't know. The question is, how do you pay him? I always feel like Sal, whether to be, I don't want to be flippant and say the salary cap doesn't matter, because you hear that sometimes, and I just think that's maybe a little bit lazy. But I feel like for the first year, like this year, you can usually find a way to finagle stuff and keep the cap hit down in year one. Like if he were to come here with a new monster contract, which of course you would, if you're giving up all that, you're paying him. He's at the top of the heap now of those type of players, right? So what is that, over like $42 million a year or something, right? So you're going to pay him like annual average value, but year one, you know, with the way you can allocate the bonuses and how long you make the contract and spread it out and all that, the year one cap hit can be more manageable. So I'm not here to tell you exactly like XXXYYY how you would do it. I feel like there's a way that can be done, but it's, you know, still very cumbersome, and it'd be obviously a humongous commitment and a big change because, you know, they just paid Rousseau, they've got Bosa here, and believe me, I know Parsons is a much better deal, much better player than either of those guys probably will ever be, but it's a huge, huge deal to pull off. I wonder if he will actually end up getting traded.
My guess is he won't. I think this is kind of what Jerry Jones does a little bit. He gets it to the point where everybody just starts stirring up a little bit and becomes a bit of drama. And then, we took care of the guy in the end. This is kind of his what he does, how he operates. It's what he did with Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, right? But, you know, right now, Micah Parsons has made it clear, like, hey, he wants to be traded. So we'll see where it goes. My guess is they won't. They won't trade him. But you never know. I would say this, too. If he does, I've seen people say Micah Parsons would love to play with Dan Quinn. I could never imagine Jerry Jones trading him to Washington. Right? Come on. That's no way that's happening.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Dallas does have, it's all about leverage, right? One might ask, like, well, why is this different than the James Cook situation? They both have a year left on their contract, and, Cook decided to play ball and come in and work his way through this year, and we'll see if anything happens with the contract. I still don't think it will. I know last time we talked about it, that was your thought too. Parsons is just, it's a different position. It's a premium position that gets paid. But with all that said, Dallas has, he's on a fifth-year option this year. Next year, they could franchise him. They could franchise him again in 27 if they wanted to. It's the same sort of statements you could make about the Bills and Cook. Like, if the Bills really wanted to retain James Cook, they hold all the cards there. They'll have to pay for it, in the means of a franchise tag, which is very pricey for 1 year. Not ideal at all, and the player doesn't usually like it. But that's the situation. The only leverage Parsons has is that he's he's at a marquee position, and you know, maybe Dallas will feel some pressure to do something, but they don't, in reality, have to do anything.
That's right, and they can decide to pull that lever at the end of the season, going into next season. But I guess in the meantime, you play with fire a little bit with your best player and what his feelings are about everything. Now, Terry McLaurin feels a little bit more entrenched because this has been going on for a little while, right? Feels like it's a little bit more to a kind of a crisis point of what Micah Parsons is. Maybe, you know, I know Micah Parsons, this goes back a ways as well, but it feels like Terry McLaurin, that kind of relationship feels like it's a little bit more fractured than what it is with Parsons and Dallas. I don't know, and you know, that's just my interpretation of it. But
yeah,
when he showed up, and then you know he didn't practice, went on a list or whatever, and now he wants traded. It just feels like there's not a good relationship there right now.
Yeah, the Dallas thing, for folks who don't know the details, because Parsons posted a lengthy explanation on, I think originally Instagram, and it has shown up now on Twitter/X. According to Parsons, and this I think has already been reported to some extent, but he lays it out there plainly. This is him, presumably maybe with the help of advisors or agents or whatever, but he says at the end of the season before last, so the end of the 23 season.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
He told his agent to like engage. I'd like to, you know, sign, you know, get an extension done. And this is, you know, this is before the Myles Garrett extension and before the TJ Watt. So like a bargain could have been had there probably, right? But Dallas didn't want to do anything. And Parsons' reaction to that, as he writes, is, well, okay, I'll play the 24 season. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to go do my work, right? And so he does that. The 24 season comes and goes. And he eventually comes around to having a conversation with Jerry Jones that, according to Parsons, started out about leadership and segued into talking about contract. Now, this is just the player and the owner having this conversation. And the way Parsons tells it is that when he then went to his agent and said, look, I've had this talk with Jerry, we should engage. You should call them and we'll get the ball rolling on this. That the Cowboys went dark. They thought that whatever conversations they had without the agent present at all, involved in any part of it, that Jones thought, oh, we've got the framework for a deal here, which I just think is, it's so bizarre, it's offensive. Like, how in the world are you in the NFL business and think that you are going to make a deal with this guy, right, a premier player at a premier position, without his agent? And like suddenly that's supposed to be binding? I just think that is ridiculous.
It's Jerry Jones not understanding maybe the way things work now compared to the way they used to work back in the day. And I think I've actually come around a lot more on Jerry Jones over the years on what he's all about. I think Jerry used to, I had a sense, and I always thought Jerry was simply, you know, about the Cowboys, doesn't matter, go screw you, as long as we make money. And actually, I think he's the opposite now. Jerry has kind of proven to be all about the NFL and the NFL making money. And I think it's kind of only, it's hurt his own team in a lot of ways because he's been so good at trying to help out. And even here in Buffalo, he's been a very big proponent. He's actually, he's the one that, I don't even know if they own Legends anymore, but that's his company and,
yep,
you know, the food service and all that. But he was always a big proponent of getting a new stadium here in Buffalo. And, you know, kind of harkens back to the old AFL days and NFL days where the small markets matter. And Jerry's kind of been on that train a little bit. But one of the criticisms of Jerry Jones, believe it or not, over the last few years and several years is he kind of doesn't take care of his own team and his own players anymore because he's too fixated on that. And he's become more of a guy for the league instead of his own team, which is totally bizarre.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, a lot of that. Yeah, he definitely has been someone. I know he played a role in getting this thing across the finish line here for the Bills. So hats off for that. But, man, he's botching his team, I think.
He is.
Pretty badly. Because even if you get things settled, right, like Prescott and Lamb have even talked this week or recently about, like, yeah, you know, it's just always kind of like this. And, you know, sure, that's what the money's for, right? It should make it all go away, but no one likes to be mistreated and disrespected, and I just don't understand why he is treating some of his players this way.
I think it is, to me, my interpretation is, going back to what I just said, I think Jerry takes the philosophy of, we're the Dallas Cowboys. We have the star on our helmet. But Jerry, this isn't 1989 anymore, right, when you bought the team. And I think he believes that, hey, we're going to get every star player to want to play here. And when they are here, they're always going to resign here because we are the Dallas Cowboys. That's not how it works. And, oh, by the way, they have not won in a long time.
Right.
Right. It doesn't mean anything to a lot of guys, the Dallas Cowboys, the star. This isn't thinking back to Roger Staubach of 1970s and Tony Dorsett of 1970s or even Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith in 1990s. I mean, Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb weren't alive when those guys won.
We've got some folks on hold. One wants to talk about the stadium. One that wants to talk about these trade ideas. We'll get to you folks, so stay there when we continue here. Sal Capaccio is live at Highmark Stadium. I am the Bulldog, live in our Amherst studios. We'll continue after this on WGR.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.